You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. I'm your host, Mark King, for the show. Another Thursday edition of the show today. I've already done one, so if you want all of my thoughts on the Mike Conley trade, if you want to know what a traded player exception is, as boring as that sounds, and what the Grizzlies can do with it, we also answer your questions on that episode as well. So go check that out. It's on the LockedOnGrizzlies.com page. It's on all the places you subscribe to this show. So don't forget to subscribe to Locked On Grizzlies on all the channels. But for the first time ever, maybe the only time ever, Joe Mullinex with me in person is in Memphis today for the draft, so decided to stop by and talk about the Grizzlies and everything that's going on. We have a lot to talk about. Last time we talked, we didn't have much to talk about at all because the Grizzlies are heading out of coach, and but now we have almost too much. What's going on, man?
Not much. It's good to see you. It's good to be here back in Memphis. It's always fun to come back. I was here last year for the draft and back this year, and a little bit different circumstances, different plans, actually working this time around. Last time I was able to enjoy it a little bit more in terms of going around and seeing the city. My first place that I went back to today upon my return to Memphis was Target to get some very important supplies for our draft party tonight at the Bluff that I know you'll be attending after all the stuff is done.
Yo, Target's underrated, though.
Target is underrated. It was very difficult, though, because apparently in Northern Virginia where I live, they haven't fully renovated the Targets yet. So I go to an old Target, in air quotes, for those of you that are watching this podcast, which is none of you. I go to an old Target, and I'm used to the layout. This is a newly renovated Target here. I was at Colonial, on the one on Colonial Road, and that's the one I used to go to all the time when we lived here 6 years ago now. And yeah, I wandered for 15 minutes looking for raffle tickets.
That's the weirdest thing ever when you go to a place like at a different area, a different city, and you think you just assume it's supposed to be laid out exactly like you're, but it's never,
it's not at all.
It never is, and you wander around for a long time, but
that's okay. I got what we needed, and the watch party tonight at the Bluff is going to be awesome.
Cool. Yeah, we'll be out there. Make sure you guys come out. I'll be out there after we get done with the forum. Joe and I will both be there covering. So we'll be there probably after the 15th pick, probably somewhere around there. So probably 7:30-ish. But again, the party at the Bluff, ESPN, Grizzly Bear Blues, I'll be out there. I Love Memphis be out there. They have a live show with Parker and Nate and those guys. So a lot of things happening tonight, so come out, hang out with us. Don't ask us any questions because I will be drinking. So if you ask me, I might answer, but it might not be the right answer. I'll answer you. It might not be the right one, but come out, hang out. We'll have a good time. Let's talk about Mike Conley. The Utah Jazz traded for Mike Conley yesterday. I took a lot longer to do a reaction podcast than I normally do, and I had a lot of time to think about it. And my immediate reaction was I didn't love it. I thought it was okay, but the more I looked and the more I dug it, the more I liked it.
The star of it is the 2020 protected first.
Absolutely.
That's the star of it. And I think that that's probably where the divide is among Grizzlies fans, even a few media members that I've seen that are a little bit iffy on it. You have to have, it's all about the perspective you have. If you go into it thinking that Mike Conley should get you a better player than Grayson Allen, Kyle Korver, and Jay Crowder, yeah, in theory, you're right, but the star of the trade was not those three players. Two of those three, I would argue, aren't going to ever play for the Grizzlies. I'd be stunned if Kyle Korver played for the Grizzlies. He's 38 years old. If he doesn't retire, he's going to want to go to the Lakers with LeBron on a veteran minimum. He wants to win a championship. So he's not going to play in Memphis. And his contract's partially guaranteed, so I think Memphis could save about $3.5 million if they waive him. So I don't think Kyle Korver will ever be a Memphis Grizzly in terms of actually wearing a uniform. Jay Crowder might stick around longer, but he's a guy who, again, trade deadline 2020 comes along, and that's an asset that you can flip in terms of him helping a contender as a role player and you getting back a future first or a couple of seconds maybe is more realistic for Jay Crowder. So one of our questions, we have a GBB roundtable live over at grizzlybearblues.com, and one of the questions I asked our writers was what's the over-under in terms of games played for Jay Crowder and Kyle Korver? I set it at 50. And I took the under. I don't think Jay Crowder and Kyle Korver will play less, or I think they will play less than 50 games, and I really think Korver will play zero. Grayson Allen might wind up being a good basketball player. Right now, he's not a good NBA basketball player. He's not, but he's also young, and he has a track record and a pedigree of being able to shoot the three, which with Ja Morant almost certainly coming to Memphis, and obviously Jaren, you need as many shooters around those guys as possible. So I think Grayson Allen's worth taking a flyer on. I would have preferred Royce O'Neal, but that probably was a bridge too far for Utah. I know they really like him after doing a podcast with the SLC Dunk folks, the Utah Jazz SB Nation site. They really like Royce, so maybe that was too much. And maybe Memphis didn't like him as much as I do. But the star of the trade is the 2021st and the protections on it that lead to it almost certainly conveying in 2022, which, as you know, as I know, and I know you know, Mark, that's that famed double draft, possibly, where all the high school seniors that would have gone to go into college because of the one-and-done rule. The one-and-done rule is believed to be abolished at that point. So you'll have a double draft where it's the kids who had to go to college and the kids who didn't have to go to college, and a pick at 15 or 16 in the 2022 draft is essentially like a pick in the lottery in this year's draft. So that's extremely smart. That's forward thinking. They're going to have to max Jaren, assuming they play the way that they're capable of. A max contract for Jaren will be coming, and then a max contract for Ja will be coming in the season or two after that. So you're looking at a team that's going to be cash-strapped. They're going to have an opportunity to add two young talents on rookie deals alongside Jaren and Ja. So to me, it's a confirmation of just how different this front office is, and it was exciting to see them be that forward-thinking about a deal for somebody as important as Mike Conley. I thought it was a home run. I thought it was and I think Matt Hardlicka wrote on his Patreon page, former GB Beer, he called it the greatest trade in Memphis Grizzlies history, and I don't necessarily disagree with him.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I mentioned this on the show I did by myself that was just about Mike Conley as well. Like, having the idea or to be able to protect it in such a way, and that was the smartest thing about protecting it, where only conveys 8 to 14, knowing that they're going to be 15 to 30 the next two seasons, and then in 2022, possibly 2023, like, that could be a real asset. And an asset where you potentially just kind of forget it. Like, it's not one of those things where you have it right away. It's where you kind of lob it off into the future and you look up and you go, oh shit, we have two first round picks this year. And if for some reason they're bad or then they have two good first round. So like, it's the little things. I know that's, and it sounds like something that, I know that we're talking about something that is very, very small, but those are like the small things that a front office and you go, huh, those are the type of things. Once I started digging into it, once you get some of the things and again, some of the cap savings they're going to get off of this, like, it's a trade that allows a lot of – get you assets and allows a lot of flexibility. Again, Grayson Allen, we just don't know. Like, he could be great, he could be bad. We just don't know. Right. He didn't really get a lot of time, and who knows? But maybe Jay Crowder is an asset. Like you said, in the future, I said the same thing. Maybe you flip him at the trade deadline. So – there's a lot of things to like, and I was honestly, because on my show on, I think Tuesday, we did Mike Conley trades, and I said this exact trade, but without the future first. And I said, I don't know if that's going to work, because I don't know what happens, but then they put that future first, and I think there were supports that even Utah went a little further than they wanted to, in as far as giving up what they got. But to get that for an aging Mike Conley, I think that's a pretty good haul.
It was an all-in move for Utah, and I think that the Utah Jazz sitting here today are, if not the top contender, at worst second or third in the Western Conference to get to the NBA Finals. Now, that's before Kawhi Leonard potentially becomes an LA Clipper. That's before the Lakers find a way to get a third star next to LeBron and AD. So that could change, but Utah looks pretty darn stout right now, and they didn't give up any of their key players in that trade. And Memphis was wise to do it that way, because Utah didn't have the combination of expiring contracts. Like, Derek Favors is more valuable to Utah at this stage than he is to Memphis. Favors doesn't fit what Memphis is trying to do.
Right. And they can, Joe Ingles, they can waive Favors too and create cap space they want.
Exactly. To. But even then, that's kind of a waste of Derek Favors. I don't know that that makes a ton of sense for Utah in terms of an asset.
Right.
As a guy that you could send out for a second round, a couple of seconds, or a future first, or a young player. You know, Joe Ingles, it was rumored, well, what if we substituted, or I talked about on the SLC Dunk podcast with those guys, what if we took out another first and added Joe Ingles? Joe Ingles is a better player,
sure,
but he doesn't fit the window. Memphis doesn't need to worry right now about, ooh, am I going to be 30 and 52 or am I going to be 33 and 49?
Right.
To me, and I used to be one of the loudest ringers of the bell when it comes to conveying the pick, the luck that has fallen into the laps of the Grizzlies, the ability to pick Ja Morant tonight, the convey debate is over. It doesn't matter anymore. If Memphis is really bad next year and they have a top six pick and the pick doesn't convey, now you will have had 3 years of top six picks to build around.
Right.
So yeah, is it ideal that your 2021 first isn't going to be there? No, it's not ideal. But at the same time, you will have had Jaren Jackson Jr., Ja Morant, and whoever the pick would be in 2020. And now this trade for the Utah pick nullifies the hurt of that 2021st being conveyed. It almost makes it worth it. Not quite there, because
Nothing makes it worth it for Jeff Green.
You're a step ahead of me, and I'll never forgive Jeff Green for making me look dumber than I am. I'm not the smartest man, but I'm not that dumb. Jeff Green, I fell hard for him. So I'll never fully move on, but I do think that it's important to note that while folks will continue to talk about conveying, and I think it's worth having that conversation, it shouldn't be a focus anymore. Like last year, I went into the season saying the goal is to convey this pick. Next year, the goal is going to be growing Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant by any means necessary.
Sure.
If that means you go 20 and 62 and you pick in the top four again next year, so be it. If it means that you're 33 and 49 and those young guys are better than you thought they would be, that's awesome too. You don't go out and actively tank, but you also don't go out and pursue what the new Grizzlies front office would say reactive moves. It's all proactive from here on in. And it also alleviates some of the stress. Like you talked about Grayson Allen not playing well in Utah. Well, Utah was trying to compete. They were trying to be a championship team. How many minutes, solid minutes, realistically, is a rookie in the pick with a pick in the 20s going to get for a team that's trying to compete? Think back to the grit and grind era. You know, guys like Jordan Adams or Tony Roten. You know, these guys that were kind of doomed from the jump because they weren't going to get the minutes to develop. Grayson Allen's coming to a situation where he's going to get the minutes to develop. If they don't take a shooting guard tonight, it's either going to be Dylan Brooks or Grayson Allen starting at the two for the Memphis Grizzlies. And it's probably going to be Dylan Brooks, but that's the reality. You know, even if he's not a starter, he's probably going to be a guy who gets 18 to 20 minutes a night for this team. And that's going to be a steady role that he wouldn't have seen for a Jazz team that sees themselves as an NBA Finals contender.
I think you're right. Let's take a quick break. We will be back with Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. We'll finish up with him after the break. Welcome back to the show. Again, joining me in person for the first time, Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. Again, like we talked about earlier in the show, make sure you come down and hang out with us at the party over at the Bluff tonight, the draft party. It will be a celebration of Ja Morant. Obviously, this ensures that Ja Morant's going to be the pick, obviously with Mike Conley leaving. But there's been some talk. It's been some rumors, if you will, on the Twitter rumor mill that New Orleans wants to move up badly. I don't know if it's posturing. Would you trade this pick at all? For me, I'm not trading this pick. I mean, you only get a chance to draft superstars once. I have been on the record just screaming that I think Ja Morant's going to be very...
You have been very sternly on the record about that.
Very,
we almost broke up over it.
We almost did, but we didn't. Very, very stern that he's going to be a superstar. But is there any way you trade for... I mean, is there any package that you trade for? I mean, obviously, they could put together a real good package of, like, actual budding stars, but... You know, what it's been out there is like Brandon Ingram and like in the four or some stuff like that. Like, is there anything that gets you excited?
It would not involve Brandon Ingram. I'll say that.
No.
if it would have to start with Lonzo Ball. And I think he's a player that gets a bad rep because of his father. But if you watch him actually play, he's a pretty darn good basketball player, and he has serious flaws, like his free throw percentage is abysmal, and no point guard should ever shoot 40% from the free throw line. Right. So that's bad, and I can't excuse that, but it would start there. If we're talking one of the young Lakers that they just acquired, it would be Lonzo Ball. From there, it would be the 4 overall pick, and it would probably be 2 or 3 first-rouners in the future. So if you're listening to this and you're saying to yourself, oh, well, the Pelicans would never do that. Well, no shit. They're not going to do that. And I think that brings us full circle where we say Ja Morant is too good and the fit is too clean with the Grizzlies. I've talked about this here, there, and everywhere. You have a situation where Ja Morant comes from South Carolina, a small little town. Mm-hmm. You're seeing stories leading up to the draft about how his parents put in a basketball court in their community and they have cookouts after games, and he was a zero star to Murray State to being the number 2 pick in this draft. He's a Memphian without being a Memphian. That is a Memphis story. And he's a guy who isn't like RJ Barrett, who clearly wants the bright lights of a city and cares about market. Memphis is going to be a big market to Ja Morant. It just is. Like, it's going to be a change just playing NBA basketball, even though it's in arguably, not necessarily arguably, the smallest market in the NBA. So, to me, it's too perfect of an opportunity. You have a player in Ja Morant who is explosive athletically, who can facilitate, who can have an impact offensively the same way at a young age that Jaren Jackson does defensively in terms of making his teammates better. Is he flawed? Yes. I think that there's real flaws that if you're being fair in analyzing him, you're acknowledging. Like, he needs to develop a perimeter game. He needs to develop a better pop, a pick and pop kind of thing where he can come off a screen, shoot a mid-range jumper because defenses are going to collapse the paint and not let him drive as much as he'd like. He needs to build on his frame. But those are all things that can take time, and now Memphis has that time to give him if they allow for him to develop his story, his personality. I like how he can be the yin to Jaren Jackson Jr.'s yang. I think I like how those personalities will fit and mesh. It's too perfect of a marriage to allow to switch and change unless it's for a haul that no team in their right mind would give up. And this is a chance for the Grizzlies to get a superstar. It may not be the best chance. Obviously, Zion is a superstar. But I think outside of Zion Williamson, Ja Morant's the next best bet to be a superstar in this draft. And those guys aren't coming to Memphis in free agency.
No.
You know, you hear people that are frustrated about the LA Lakers. They literally have people questioning whether or not they understand the basics of the CBA and the salary cap. Now, I'm sure they do, but the point is they've done so many dumb things that people legitimately question that. Memphis is obviously building away from a similar situation themselves with a new front office, but the fact remains, despite how bad the Lakers have been, despite how convoluted the mindset of the Knicks have been, every year they're in the mix for free agents. Why?
Yeah.
Because they're in New York.
Because they're the Lakers.
There's the Lakers and the Knicks.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies will never be that, ever, for a variety of reasons that if you don't get it, maybe that's a separate podcast that we can talk about economics and location and social studies and all that. There's a bunch of reasons why Memphis will not be New York or L.A. That doesn't make it a place where basketball can't thrive. That doesn't make it a place where a player can't spend a lot of their career. Mike Conley's a great example of that.
Yep.
And I think that Ja Morant can be that next guy if he's given the opportunity. I think Memphis would be foolish to move off from him now that they have this in front of them.
Well, it's also rare. I think it's also rare when you go from being able to get a superstar, because most of the time at 1, 2, and 3, you're just picking the best player and you figure it out from there. But it's also rare you get to be able to pick a potential superstar, but also have the exact need for that player. I mean, sometimes that doesn't always line up. The need and player, the best player available, doesn't always line up. And I'm obviously of the mind of you just pick the best player at that spot and you figure it out. Like if they're number one, you just pick Zion. And maybe Zion and Jaren can't mesh together. Who knows? But you just figure it out later. But the idea of superstar and player don't always line up, and for the like you said, for the fit, it's almost too good for the Grizzlies, and you know, maybe we're wrong. We don't know. We have no idea what Ja Morant's going to be, but the likelihood of a player in that spot being good is turns out usually more often than not. Let's take one more break. We will finish up in the last segment with Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. Welcome back to the show. Again, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, Joe Mullinex, joining me today of the draft. A great day indeed, as we say goodbye to Mike Conley yesterday and kind of usher in John Morant today. It's almost fitting that it happened yesterday. Obviously, I know they wanted to just figure out where the Utah was picking, and I don't think they did it because it was a good story. But it is a good story. It's fun for us to talk about. We talked about John Morant, obviously, in the last segment and his fit. I want to get back to this Mike Conley trade, just the last part of it. And we talked about it in a little bit in the first segment. But the idea of the cap relief they're going to get, where do you land? Obviously, we talked about in my show earlier today about a traded player reception. It was an 8-minute segment on a TP, and I guarantee it was the most boring segment ever. But I felt like it needed to be explained a little bit because it's difficult to understand.
Sure.
But the idea of using a traded player exception to bring in a bad contract for assets, although that contract will still be on your books for multiple years, it just doesn't. It's not like it non-exists. That's like the most misconception about this TP, right? Is that it just won't. The contract will just be non-existent, and it'll still be there. Where do you land on using that maybe rental cap space for picks versus Treby trying to actually go out and sign a younger player to a longer term, you know, actually using the cap space? I don't know how much we're actually going to have yet. I haven't done the math, but we're going to have some.
It's roughly, like, in terms of the player exception, I think it's around $25 million right now.
Player exception, it would actually be more around 29.
So, yeah. So
it depends on how they structure the trade.
Right.
If they bring those players into already exceptions, it will be more. It all depends on how they structure the trade.
Sure. So. To me, the place where this franchise is at, the ultimate goal needs to be building around Jaren Jackson Jr. and John Morant. And in order to achieve that goal, you need as many assets as possible because you need them for future trades, like the Pelicans trying to get Bradley Beal right now. Like,
sure.
That's still not going to happen. And maybe I'll have egg in my face and they'll pull it off. But Washington doesn't even have a GM right now. I doubt their ownership is allowing them to trade away the best player in the franchise,
sure,
without a general manager. So anyway, but my point is the fact that that can even be a conversation is because the Pelicans have all these assets now. Memphis needs to do the same thing, but they're not going to be able to do it through sheer luck the way that the Pelicans kind of have been able to now that they have Zion and they had Anthony Davis. Now that they have this player exception, they can do it through taking on the garbage of other people, you know, whether it's Hassan Whiteside of the Miami Heat, Danilo Gallinari of the Clippers, and that's kind of disrespectful to Gallinari. He had a good season last year, but I'm talking about the money, the sheer size of the contract. That is what limits places like Miami, Los Angeles, areas that players see as ideal for living and working in year round. So it's not like you live in Memphis for 6 months and then you go live in LA for the other 6 months like Chandler Parsons does or another player like that. In order for that to be realized, they have to right some of the wrongs of the bad deals they've done in the past. And Memphis is going to be able to offer that opportunity now, but it's going to cost people, and it's going to cost them first-round picks. Like, if the Clippers wanted to free up another max slot, and they were willing to give you the 2021 unprotected first from the Miami Heat and Danilo Gallinari, I would say yes before they could change their minds, because
sure,
that allows for you to get another asset. And you may not ever make that pick, but you can use that pick in a future trade to get another star to put next to Jaren and Ja, because, again, we've already covered this. You're not getting those guys in free agency. You're doing it through the draft,
yeah,
but you can also do it via trade. Zach Randolph trade, great example. The Pau Gasol trade, they backed into Marc Gasol, but that's another example. They acquire people via trade and the draft. So it's more bullets in the chamber. It's more tools in your tool belt, whatever cliche,
sure,
you want to use.
Yep.
It's more items at your disposal to give to another team via trade, or to trade up in a draft, or to trade back in a draft and get even more assets. The bottom line with that is it gives flexibility. Memphis has a lot more potential to do a lot of different things now than they did 2 days ago because of the TPE that they generated through the Conley trade.
Yeah, it's the whole conversation of when we've had this during the year that,
right,
second-round picks aren't assets, or second-round picks aren't worth anything.
Right.
Well, they're still assets.
Sure.
Whether they're high-value assets, mm-hmm, is a different conversation, but they're still assets, and same way these first-round picks would be assets, you might not necessarily have them have to use them. I mean, you might want to. Right. Miami might be awful in that situation. Miami might be a terrible team, and it might be a great draft pick. Or it might be in the lower 20s, and you just facilitate other trades. There are all types of things that you can use with that. So I'm of the mind that if the contracts are short enough, the bad contracts are short enough, that's what you do. Anything out there that's a long-term, and a lot of these – the only other problem you have is you have a lot of these guys, a lot of these bad deals in 2016.
Right.
They're coming off the books or coming off your books next year, like Chandler Parsons, or also coming off everybody's books next year.
Right.
So now.
Whiteside's a good example of that.
Yeah. So now is the time you do those deals where you take on bad contracts for the year, for the expiring. Because so those teams can go out, if they see themselves as contenders, those teams can go out and sign better free agents.
Mm-hmm.
Because next year, everybody's going to be in the same boat. Everybody's going to have cap space next year. So you're going to have a lot of space, but a lot of those bad deals, like you said, Whiteside, Chandler Parsons, that were done in 2016 are all coming off the books now. So, or next year. So if they do it, I think now is the time to do it. So, Joe, I appreciate it, man.
I appreciate
you. We're going to, again, make sure you guys come out to the Bluff tonight. Joe and I will both be there after a little bit. But again, there'll be all the GBBs out there. All the Memphis will be out there. A lot of giveaways, all kinds of stuff. And, of course, we'll just be drinking and have a good time.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're doing a raffle for Mid-South Food Bank. We're going to do a John Morant signed photograph. Memphis City Designs gave us some T-shirts. Mandara Designs did a great custom Grizzlies bottle opener. That'll be raffled off. So come out, buy some raffle tickets, enjoy yourself at the Bluff, watch the draft with us, and support a good cause and help out the Mid-South Food Bank. It's going to be a good time.
It'll be fun. Make sure you go out and subscribe to the podcast. Get it wherever you can. Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We're literally wherever you get your podcasts, go and get it. Subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you don't know where to go, if you're still confused after all that, just go to LockedOnGrizzlies.com.